explain something briefly, and I'm sure you have questions. Then we will give you the opportunity to ask questions. Mr. Ian.
All right. One more? No. Thanks very much. Listen, if you're covering South Sudan, I'm sure you're sick and tired of hearing speeches. So I will just make a couple of remarks, and then if you have any questions, we'll be happy to answer them. Although there have been many speeches, we do find the moment in Sudan extremely exciting, and so we are privileged, I think, to share on the birth of this new nation. After the celebrations, I think this is where the hard work begins. And in looking forward in terms of what we think this new country should be focusing on and the kinds of things that we will be working, just wanted to make a couple of points. Some of these are pretty obvious, but I think they're worth repeating. The first one is, I think whatever plans, strategies, policies the new government begins to implement, we firmly believe that they need to be very participatory. I think the spirit that we all saw on Saturday was one of working together and sharing common goals and openness. I think that we would like to encourage the government to maintain that spirit. People need to feel that they're part of the decisions that are being made by their leaders. And I think the speech that the president made spoke about that. He spoke about transparency and open government. So we certainly hope that this will be the way that things are done in South Sudan. The second one, we come at these issues from a development point of view. It's very clear to us, South Sudan emerges as the most oil-dependent economy in the world. 98% of the government's revenues come from oil. There's no other country that has those kind of numbers. So from an economic point of view, we feel it's very, very critical that this economy diversify. Managing an oil-based economy is very complicated, even for very sophisticated governments and ministries. It's also very dangerous because the price of oil goes up and down. And when there are fluctuations, that's when we see governments get into trouble. So it's fundamental that this economy, one, rely on the private sector, and two, diversify. What does it diversify into? Its greatest potential, which is agriculture and livestock. Okay. It's easy to say, a lot harder to actually do in practice, because the agriculture sector needs so much. It needs infrastructure. Farmers need fertilizer, seeds. And so it's a multitude of things that the government has to do and do them at the same time and do them more or less right. The third point is something that we in the World Bank have been working on, trying to understand how countries coming out of either a prolonged political crisis or decades of conflict, how do countries succeed and how long does it take? You think it's a simple question, it's not simple to answer. So we did take a look at, over the last three decades, the countries that have done the best in terms of creating a state structure, if you like, institutions that function more or less okay. They're not perfect, but ministries that actually deliver services, power companies that actually deliver electricity more or less reliably. And we found that for the 20 countries that had gone through this post-conflict transition, it took them about 20 years to get to a point where institutions function more or less okay. So we're not looking at something that looks like a Ministry of Education in Denmark, but we're looking at something that perhaps looks like a ministry in Brazil or perhaps South Africa. So it's not perfection. I think what that tells us is that creating institutions is an incredibly long process and takes an enormous amount of effort and perseverance. And remember, these 20 countries that we looked at were the ones that have done the best. Other countries took a lot longer. So the message from our side is, as you go into independence, the expectations from people are going to be very high. People want to see a difference. You know, you've gone through this three-decade struggle. You've celebrated independence. Okay, what happens tomorrow? Whose life improves? Do parents have greater hope for their children? And that has to be accomplished by institutions. Institutions, agencies, ministries, they have to deliver the services. So the expectations are very high, and yet we know that it practically takes a generation. Okay, so the message for the government, for the people of South Sudan, for ourselves as donors that are going to accompany this process, is be patient, be persistent, and persevere, and remember that there will be setbacks. There will be things that will go wrong. People will get frustrated, but it just takes a long time. And those were the general remarks. I hope I said something different from what you've been hearing for the last couple of weeks. Happy to answer any questions. Would you?
Yes, please. You introduce yourself and your media house and ask your question.
People are thinking right now about the death wave, you know.
The death?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The death of South Sudan.
Right.
And when is that going to happen, if at all?
Okay. Do you want to take a couple or do you want to answer them one by one?
Let's take three at a time. Yes.
I heard that on the notes, the bank notes, the new bank notes, the signature.
The bank, you mean the currency?
Yeah,
the currency.
Yeah. The signature of the Ministry of Finance.
Okay, while you think of other questions, let me give that.
Sure. On the debt, this has been something that's been negotiating between, I guess it's now the Republic of Sudan, which used to be North Sudan, and the new government. Our understanding is that the negotiations that have been agreed is what was being called the zero option, which means that the North takes all the debt of Sudan. And so in terms of the external debt, which was between $38 and $30 billion in arrears, that debt is now the responsibility of Khartoum. So in terms of the external debt that Sudan had when it was one country, none of that reverts to the South. The understanding between the North and the South was that in exchange for that, the North would like the international community to move as quickly as possible to bring down that debt to some sustainable level that they can service, and that the government of South Sudan would help Khartoum in terms of lobbying and advocating for debt relief for the North. And that, we understand, is the agreement that was negotiated by the team led by ex-President Mbeki, who's been part of still trying to negotiate some of the unresolved issues from the CPA. In terms of the bank notes, it's the first I hear of it. But it doesn't surprise me, because this is a nation that is learning. It has to learn. I've never even thought of looking at who signs the bank notes. In most cases, it is usually the Minister of Finance, or sometimes the Governor of the Central Bank. Look, it's teething problems. It's they will have to figure it out, and I'm sure they will find many more instances of these kind of little things that actually nobody has thought to either give them advice or they themselves haven't thought of. So I think it's fine. I'm sure they will resolve it quite amicably.
As you know, the debt negotiations in Addis have kind of come to a standstill, and I understand they're supposed to start in the next week again. But I'm wondering if you might explain from an economic perspective what could happen if an agreement isn't come to pass on oil soon.